Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo, Meditation, and much, much more.
And much, much more. We're going to have to do us a new intro because it still says Duchess and Jewels, and Fabio needs to be named in that intro, like with an honor that she deserves. Because I am so happy to have you here with me, Fabio. How you doing, sweetie?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here. Oh, my goodness. You know, especially since this weather is as kooky as it is, but I'm not going to get into that right now.
Right. The show should be, well, you know, I'm not feeling too up to par today. I've had about with not feeling well all last week, and I have been planning for this surgery on my shoulder, and the planning process has been horrendous because there's so much that I have to work towards putting into place because I'm going to be with just my left arm. Mm. So there's a lot of things I need to prep for and make arrangements with transportation services. I won't be able to drive for a month, and I won't be able to. I have people that are making dishes for me and bringing them over for me to put in my freezer so that I can. And they're so cute because they bring me things and say, now look, all you have to do is snip, snip, snip this, and, you know, you don't need both your arms because you're going to have one in a sling, but this will be very easy for you to open. And I'm saying, I never held a pair of scissors with my left hand, so that's going to be, you know, interesting. But they're being so sweet to me and so, how do you say, just sensitive to what I may possibly need. Mm-hmm. And so it's been rewarding. It's been nice. I figured we're going to start out with some of Lena Stevens's PowPath for the month. I'm not going to read the whole thing, so I don't want everybody to think I'm going to go through relationships and go through the environment. We know what's going on out there. We know what the environment is like. Yesterday we had 80 degrees here in Virginia, and today we're down to like 49, 50 degrees, and it's cold and rainy and just that kind of thing. Like you said, we don't need to get into the weather because everybody's weather is acting crazy. So let's talk about the dates and time frames on her power path and what the energies is doing to some of us. She was saying that from the 1st of April until the 8th, we may be feeling overwhelmed, irritated, and impatient during that week. And I know I had my irritations and impatience during that week. Lena was saying, yeah, we need to take some deep breaths and stay neutral and in humor about mishaps, miscommunication, and a seemingly constant with just everything to a new plan. Those who know how to multitask will have an easier time of it, but there is still a danger of going over the edge. This is a good week to regroup and reorganize and to be disciplined and to keep unnecessary obligations off your plate. Now, I'm not good at multitasking. I need a list of things. I need to follow them in order because I have that ADD thing going on because if I'm doing something here and I got to take this piece of paper in the next room, then I forget about what I was doing over there because I start doing stuff in the next room. So I can't be, you know, doing that back and forth thing. She's saying that this will also be a push-pull time, you know. We need to, you know, feel pushed by our own and other people's impatience, and that's what we're going to be feeling, and pulled in many different directions at the same time. it's kind of sort of like that gas pedal is getting gauged, but the brakes are still on. Y'all know how that is if you drive it. You know, when you don't want the car to shut off on you because you got something going on there. So you got your foot on the gas, but then you got to have your foot on the brake at the same time. And she said there may be confusion and mixed messages, which can keep you from taking action. But some action is necessary to keep things moving. We got to be methodical and mindful at this time so we don't miss something important. Details are also in need of refinement and attention. So what you mean, say what you mean, and mean what you say. Act with integrity and be mindful of how you treat others. That's very important because we get all bent out of shape and we start treating people like crazy. And, I mean, that goes both ways because you may feel like you're being treated a particular way that's out of whack and out of balance, and so then you jump there, you know. Mm-hmm. So it works on both sides of this proverbial coin. We got to rely on beauty to feed our senses. And so don't be afraid to ask for help and support from your allies. Now, this help and support, okay, let's go. Let's talk about that. When we ask people for help and support, we're going to have to be very conscious that we accept the help they bring to us. Their way, because they're not going to bring it to us the way we think we're supposed to get it. Right. So we're going to be patient with that. You know what I mean? Very patient with that. So, Fabiya, you can jump in here anytime you want to. I'll continue focusing on what Lena is saying, but I'm sure you have some, you know, some voice in this, because that's what's happening. People say they're going to help us, but they don't give us the help the way we think they're supposed to give it to us.
Well, that's also because we are attached or wed to our own process or patterns, you see, because there's more than one way of skinning a cat. Excuse me, but we like the way we do it because we think it's more efficient, effective, whatever, right? And then someone comes over and is like, well, I'll do this thing for you. And you're like, wait a minute, that's not right. You can't do it that way. You're supposed to do it this way or that way, which impedes their process and ours as well. You know what I mean? We can't be receptive. We can't be receptive to what it is that they're gifting us. And it also has to do with us really kind of dealing with our own senses of vulnerability, you know, in these situations of where when we're needing to have help, you know.
Right, especially if you're over, if you've been independent all of your your lifetime, then all of a sudden you need somebody to help you, and you know you want to lean on somebody, but then it's like they ain't used to you leaning.
Right,
it's just confusing, you know.
It's an adjustment. On both parties, you know, both parties have to make that adjustment because we get used to seeing people in certain lights and certain ways and certain roles. And when those roles change, we have to make the adjustment as well. You know? And some people can do it, you know, eloquently, and others are more clumsy about how they make the adjustment. But, you know, I just pray, usually in those circumstances, that everyone is able to have the winds of change gently blow them in the direction that they need to go and not just, you know, be like a tornado taking people out.
Right.
So, yeah, it's hard. It is particularly hard when, you know, like this time that we've been going through with the Art Center we have needed assistance and help and everything, and some of our allies are under attack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to see them go through that process and to not know how to deal with it. For instance, one of our board members challenges, she's a European American, and she often challenges other European Americans over their white fragility and over the unintentional and unconscious choices that they make, which help to reinforce racism, right?
Right.
And so she's in this church that is supposed to be about welcoming all thoughts and religious, you know, concepts and rituals into the facility, but they have been unconsciously, and it has come more to the forefront now, not dealing with people of color and their issues, and they haven't been really good allies in the community, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she attempts to assist them and help them and do whatever and talk to them about the process that they say they, in fact, want to change around. So now what they're doing to attack her is accusing her of having white savior complex.
Mm.
And so I said to her, and so because of it, she doesn't know if she has white savior complex. It's causing her to question herself or what have you. I said, you know, that's extremely manipulative on their end, because this particular board member is who she is. She does not have the ability to conceal what it is she feels. She just tells you like it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she is one of the most genuine people that I have met outside of my nephew, Fareed, who is on the spectrum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she is like deciding that maybe she's not going to be on the board because she doesn't want to be seen as rescuing our organization, which is an of-color organization, and she believes that people need to be in the leadership roles of our board and so forth and so on, which we agree with as well, but we also need, and we've tried to explain this to her, allies from various communities that have the ability to speak our language, you know, to be our ambassadors for people that don't necessarily look like us in the world. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
European Americans often can hear it better from other European Americans than they hear it from us, because when they hear it from people of color, all of their guilt, rage, you know, stereotype, whatever it is, gets in the middle of that conversation from them hearing it in the pure state that we often deliver it. Right?
Yeah.
And so it becomes an antagonistic situation, whereas when it's someone that looks like them, they can tell them and not necessarily have it be an antagonistic sort of situation, right?
Mm.
So now, because these individuals don't want to change in this community, although they've come to us and said, yeah, we want to change, we want, you know, to be more involved and so forth and so on, they are attacking her. You know?
Right.
And so my grandmother used to tell me this thing that as I get older, I see it happening more and more in the world. She used to say, you know, baby, people will come to you begging you to help them change. And then when you attempt to do it, they will kill you over it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
and so...
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, you got to say what you got to say, because
So we've been experiencing a lot of that through different levels from the Art Center.
Right.
And, you know, we'll talk about that a little more. But go on.
Well, you know, I just want to reiterate or to add to what you're saying, because I had an instance at my job. I was talking to my therapist, And I had to go to a meeting with my supervisors and the head manager of my area over my part-time supervisor's position. And I kept saying to my therapist, I got this. I know I'm going to present myself. I mean, I know how to lay it out. But the problem, and my therapist is white, okay? Mm-hmm. You say European-American. I'm going to call it right there. My therapist is white, okay? And I told her, I said, the problem I'm going to have is that when I present myself, I present myself with passion. And right. People take that to mean I'm an angry black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just passionate about my feelings of
right.
what I'm expressing, and I
right.
express it very passionately. And so people take it totally out of order. I don't know if they take it out of order intentionally so that they can strike up their own personal argument with me, you know, because sometimes people can be aware that you're being passionate about something, and they can say, oh, this is the time for me to just slam dunk her ass now. You understand what I'm saying? Because I got her where I want. But what they're doing is they're using your passion
against you as a weapon.
And that, thank you, against you. And that's a sad, sad thing. You know, because they are the ones that may be argumentative. You're just being passionate in your presentation. You know, they're looking for the fight. You know, so you have a lot of people like your grandmother said. You know, they want to hear what you got to say, but then when you start saying it, they're setting you up so they can kill you.
Exactly.
All right.
Remove
and
you
can
from
see
the situation.
It coming.
Right. Right. And there's more than one way to sabotage people. There's more than one way to assassinate people. You can assassinate people's character, you know? And that is, I think, the greatest sort of disrespect that you can deliver to someone when they're trying to live a decent and righteous life is to begin by assassinating their character, you see? And because those are the things that don't go away. Because here's the thing that's really tripped out about our society. We can beat you down and just treat you heinous, you know, with, I'm trying to think of the heinously.
Nastily.
Yeah, cruelly, yes. As long as you're alive and it's still, and then once you are dead, they treat you with gentleness and respect. That is the most interesting kind of thing that I've witnessed in our society, you know, where they handle your body differently and so forth and so on. But as long as you're alive, they're willing to just be cruel, you know.
Right.
What good is it once you've died? You know, you give a person their flowers while they're alive. You know, you treat them with dignity and respect while they are alive, you know. And so I've witnessed that kind of behavior and how people go about assassinating characters of people of color. They do it all the time. I mean, that's what they're doing continuously in the news by always saying we're violent, we break laws, so this leads people to believe that we get what we deserve. Who deserves to die because they run a stop sign? You know what I mean?
Right.
Who deserves to die because they're selling $5 of loose cigarettes on the sidewalk? You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Who deserves that kind of execution, because that's what it really is, you know.
Well, what we're going to have to learn, go ahead.
Go on.
We're going to have to learn how to, well, we can't say that they're going to do what we say they need to do.
Mm-mm.
There's a lacking of a patience. There is no patience. There's no mindfulness. There's no balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this society. And I was thinking, I woke up this morning with the thought in my mind that okay, I'm getting ready to go and I'm getting ready to have this surgery. Now, this surgery has been postponed. And I'm a very independent person. Okay? You know that.
Yep.
I need no one. Okay? And when I need someone, yeah, that's me,
it's a
really
big deal.
Humbling myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm bringing myself down to a level of I need you.
Yeah.
Okay? So I feel, don't step all over me because I need you, because I'm back right off.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so
right,
when we get into, you know, this society thing of us needing one another, I think that's what happens in society.
Right.
When
right,
a culture, a people of a culture need from another culture, they're humbling themselves.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right,
don't take their need as a sign of weakness. They
right,
have stepped to the point where they're saying, I need your help.
Right.
And so
right,
what are you going to do? Are you going to help them? Or are you going to make them feel bad now because they need your help? You know?
Well, I mean, our country needed our help for 400 years without the recognition. Okay? America didn't get anywhere in the world without the free labor that they extracted from people of color communities. It wasn't just the free labor of slaves.
Right.
It was the free labors of the Chinese that built the railroads. It was,
well,
you know,
let's start with the Native
the
Americans.
Come on. It was the, if we're going to go there, all right? You
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
Right.
So they didn't get anything without extracting free labor and resources from people of color. That's how they got to where they are at in the world. And you do European cultures an injustice by not talking about what they did to get to where they were at. You lead them to believe that they are a righteous culture who never told a lie. Chop down cherry trees. Remember this? Did you chop down a cherry tree, George Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did, because I can never tell a lie. But our country is built on lies. It's built on blood. It's built on thievery, you know, theft. It's built on a lot of things that people have to take a look at in order for us to move forward and heal as a country. That's why you got Donald Trump, you know what I mean? Because people really haven't been looking at the shadow of America. Right?
Now, Rima.
They, I'm sorry.
You know what they've been doing? What I told my supervisors at my job. They have been denying Donald Trump's ignorance to hide behind their own.
That's right.
He's an ignorant man, and that's their way of hiding their own, standing behind their own ignorance.
Right.
Pushing them out there.
Well, so, I mean, well, the Speaker of the House was like, I'm out. I'm serving this term, and I'm gone, because I know that they're going after everyone who ever lied in order to protect Donald Trump, and I done told some lies.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you're not going to bring me up on treason. I'm letting you know I'm going right now.
And they may
catch
his butt before he leaves.
And they may do that. Yeah, absolutely. But here's the thing. This is something I was listening to, and I said, you know what, this is so true. They were like, do you want to really impeach Donald Trump to replace him by Pence?
No. If they know what I know about Pence.
Exactly. Come on. Or do you want to leave Donald Trump in for the next 4 years and have him weaken the Republican Party to the extent that no one will want to deal with them? Even their own Republicans will be begging for something different in 4 years.
Well, I'm looking at the fact that the Congress is getting ready to be filled with female energy.
Hello.
And it doesn't matter if the female energy is Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm,
they need more females in there, and they need to get rid of those old penguin looking.
Yeah.
Those men are old. They are old.
Yeah. They've been the old guard for a while.
You see the guy from Utah? He has been the senator from Utah ever since I lived in Utah, and my son is 34 years old.
What?
Orrin Hatch.
Look.
He was the senator. He became senator of Utah when I lived in Utah. I lived in Utah I left Utah in 1980. Okay? Before Siraj was born. This man has been the senator. So yeah, there's a new day coming.
You cannot talk about spirit without looking at the structures of power. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to say that they are different in how you use them to move through the world. Yes and no. Because if you really understood the construct of power as Western cultures see it, you would understand that its very nature creates the dynamic by which spiritual warfare can be readily exercised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, its very nature makes it so that it's easy for people to be spiritually drained, spiritually attacked, you know, so that spiritual warfare can exist.
Mm-hmm.
But people want to see it in and outside of itself. You know, want to separate it outside of the whole context of what is actually going on in the world.
Right.
And I say that to say that really, if you go into certain parts of Africa, there are people there who have no place to live, who are hungry, they're starving to death, and do not have the economic power to be able to sustain their own communities, but have no clothes, none of these things. But when you go in and ask them what they want, they will say, "Give me a Bible."
Mm.
Okay? And so I'm saying that if you are in your wholeness, right, the very first thing you don't necessarily want is the tool that they have used in order to enslave your mind. Okay? Now, I have looked at I've met some Christians, man, that have talked to me about the Bible in such a way that I understand that they have gone beyond just the mere words in the Bible, and they're dealing with the metaphysics of it.
Mm.
Right? And I'm like, look at this guy talking to me about spirit. He's talking to me about spirit, but he's talking to me about spirit through a Christian lens.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's when you know that we are all God's children.
Right.
That's when you know that, and I'm saying this to say, that it is just not the Christianity in and of itself that is the destructive force. It is how they use Christianity.
To make it that way.
Exactly. So they have taken, that's why I said, you cannot look at power and spirit and religion as if they're separate things, right? Because I had a man who used Christianity to free his people of color. And he would say, okay, do you understand that when you use earth When earth and water comes together, it activates spirit. And I was like, yes, I understand this. But I understand it from my perspective of being an African-based priest. And while we pour libation, right? You have water, you pour it to the earth. When it hits earth, it activates spirit, right? That's the essence of libation. He is talking to me, however, about Moses parting the Red Sea.
Right.
And he says the staff touches the water. The staff is earth. It touches the water, okay, activates spirit and causes the sea to part, right? And I'm like, look at him. You know what I mean?
Right,
talking to me about spirit from the lens of Christianity.
And he's
right?
trying to change you to make you think his way, and you already thinking your way like him.
Right. I'm already there.
Right.
And he says to me, and the tripped out part is that he's already there, right?
Right.
He is the first Christian that I really encountered. He said, we need to concentrate on what is alike about us and not what is different about us, right, in order to free ourselves, right? So when I encounter these situations where people here you are now preparing for your surgery, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and you are in a vulnerable state.
Very.
Right. And you are in a position of where you're humbling yourself in order to receive something.
Right? I need help.
Right. But look at this. Whenever we are in relationship, in a spiritual relationship, in any of the alignments of our life, we are humbling ourselves to receive something. Because a cup, you cannot hold a cup over the pitcher to get water, right?
Right.
You have to hold a cup under the pitcher to get water. It has to be in a state of receiving in that humbleness in order to get what it needs. So in any of these instances, there is an opportunity for power and control to interject and rear its ugly head, right?
Yeah. Teach, sister.
I'm just saying, if this is the case, it is our responsibility for us to monitor where our ego is in each one of those instances.
Absolutely. Is it the receiver?
Right.
Or the giver?
Right. In any one of those
you're
positions.
You're going to be the giver?
Right.
Of assistance?
Right.
And allow the receiver to receive it?
Exactly.
Or are you going to be the giver wanting to be a receiver at the same time? You cannot be both.
You can't.
Not simultaneously.
And
you can't say that you're coming to give something, but at the
right.
same time, you're the one that want to get.
Right. Exactly. Because at any moment in that position, your ego removes you out of spiritual alignment by seeking power. Okay?
Right. Right.
So our job is to concentrate on what makes us more alike than different. Our job is to respect the other person even though we may not respect their perspective. For instance, I am so thankful that there are fundamentalist European male Christians out there to hold their perspective, to hold that energy,
because I don't want to have that. I don't want to be in that position. I want to be the pagan African-American female. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I want this position. So thank you for being over there to hold that position, because the universe does not like vacuums, right? It abhors vacuums. Keep me over here. I'd rather be here in this space. And thank you for holding that space.
Mm-hmm.
But don't believe by any minute, by any means, minutes, thoughts, whatever you may have in your head, that I want to be like you. I don't.
Right.
You know? So, you know, it's just crazy. We have had so many crazy expressions of all of the different things that I've spoken to you about and what you've talked to me about this week and just working through the Art Center. And that's why I said, I keep telling you, I understand why Harriet Tubman carried a gun. Working at the Art Center has taught me that, not intellectually. See, I understood it intellectually, but working at the Art Center has taught me that viscerally. Because she wasn't just using it on people who didn't look like her. She was using it on people who looked like her, too.
Right.
She's like, you are not going to risk everything that I'm building because of your fear or your ego or
right.
your whatever. You know what I mean? So either you're going to go with me or you're going to stay right here. But
it's funny because one of my drivers said when I'm up around your way visiting my sister, he said, I may stop by and take you out to lunch and stuff. He said, because I go over to the shooting range. I said, I want to learn how to shoot. He said, really? He said, well, guess what? I'm taking you with me.
Hello.
So, yeah. Let me learn. I mean, I learned how to drive a tractor trailer truck. For some reason, maybe it's
That's
because
right.
I'm going to have to transport people across the country in the back of that rig.
Who knows?
You understand
Who
what
knows?
I'm saying? Because
That's
we're coming
what I'm
to an era where we're going to have to do a lot of things, and we don't know why we were taught the things
right.
or we learned the things that we learned. I never right. went out there on the road to drive no big rig. Because
right.
maybe I just needed to learn how to drive it, because next year I may need to know how to drive it. And we
Come
don't
on.
Know what we need to know until we know we need to know it.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm going to the gun range with him.
I tell you, they're like, Fabio, you going out there hunting? Mm-hmm. Watch me.
You know, so this world is coming to, you know, a lot. And I've been very, very, very independent for a long time, all of my life. So, you know, it's not
and
all that I need.
Yeah.
You
right.
know, but
learn-
God has a way of humbling all of us.
Oh,
you know?
My gosh. Isn't that the truth?
Right. But
Isn't
don't make me feel
truth?
Bad because I need. Don't.
Right.
You know, don't make me feel
right.
less than because I need you.
Right.
You know?
Right. I do. I understand that.
So,
because it is by the grace of God that it is not you in the position, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there by the grace of God, they used to say. And I used to be like, what do they mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a little kid. Until
yeah, but
I got
for the
older,
grace of God, there go
yeah, I. You're right. And until I
yeah.
got older, and I would come back into the neighborhood, right? I had gone to school at Walter H. Dyett Middle School, which is in the south side of Chicago in the hood, right?
Right.
And I went to middle school, and this middle school was, like, prominent during the time when I was going. It had the only full-size Olympic-sized pool in all of Chicago, right? And so it was a middle school that was designed to be a year-round school that operated like a high school.
Right.
So we would go 45 days during school, and then we were off for 15, and then we would go 45, but we would go the whole year long, right? It was an experimental school. And we went to different classes like everyone else. Like in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, we went to home ec, and then we would leave. Like in high school, we would go to shop, and then we would change classes, and we would go to math and English, and we would change classes, and music, and change classes, right? We had different houses. So we had house A, B, C, and D. And all of the kids in house A kind of got to know each other, right? It was like a little, it had its own little subculture. It was interesting, right? Each of the houses had its own little subculture because they had different wings. And so I was in house A. And I got to know the 8th graders, the 7th graders, the 6th graders, right? And then as I became an 8th grader, I knew the 7th and the 6th graders, right? And so we all kind of knew each other. So you actually knew 5 years of people, right? You knew your year and then the 3 years, the 2 years up ahead of you and the 2 years down below you. So I leave the neighborhood, right? And I come back. And one of my little friends across the street was named John John. It's not his real name, but his name was John John, nickname. And so I knew all of his family, all his uncles and everything, because they lived across the street in the building across from us in my house, right? In the building we lived in, 3-flat. They had like a 19-flat building. But anyway, most of it was family. So I come back after I've gone away to go to college and everything, and I run into John John, and John John tells me he's been in recovery and all this other stuff. And I'm like, what? What are you talking to me about, John? Were you, it's serious? And he's like, yeah. And all of the, he said, and you won't believe how many of the kids that we went to diet with were in the recovery room with me. They had all stayed in the community for the most part. They didn't leave. I left, right? So I come back to discover all of this from college and everything, and then I would see some people kind of like alcoholics and prostitutes that I had gone to school with. You know, it was crazy. And I was like, oh, my God. This is what they're talking about, that biblical statement. You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
had I stayed, yes, 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 yes. And when I would walk up the street reading my book, other little kids would, like, try to harass me. And it was the prostitutes, the grown prostitutes, and the we used to call them winos back in the day,
right.
But they were alcoholics, and the drug addicts who were grown on the street who would be like yelling out the window, leave that girl alone, leave her alone. They would just protect me, right?
Right.
And I'm like, see, we don't know who our angels are.
No, we don't.
And no. Therefore, we should always be treating each other with kindness and respect.
Absolutely. You know, I learned that with my sponsees. You know, they keep me on the straight, and they keep me on the straight and narrow. They keep me on that sobriety path because, you know, but for the grace of God, you know, I could be back out there. And it is me, a having been fallen angel, who has in essence found myself, it is incumbent upon me to share. However it happened for me, share it with them so that they can continue. As a matter of fact, one of my sponsees left here today, and she brought me some frozen food and stuff that I could just, you know, put in the microwave with my left arm and drop in the with my left arm and use the scissor to cut open the package with my left arm. You know, she was so excited because she has 2 years of sobriety, and I worked with her spiritually, and now she has her own sponsee. So she was sharing with me what I gave her. She's given to somebody else, and she is so happy about that. You know, one of the things that we were going to talk about this evening was about, we were going to talk about empaths.
Mm-hmm.
The empath, the feeler. Now, we've talked in the past, I am a serious empath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that I admire about empaths, and it's not that I'm patting myself on the back, but as an empath, I know that we empaths usually will treat other people the way we sense we would want to be treated if we were them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That mm-hmm. was the problem with me as a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said it before. Sitting there trying to help a woman get food stamps for her family, knowing that she needs this food for her to be $1 over income, I took that
right.
pain home with me.
Right.
You know, because I put right. myself in her shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this term empath, it's a form of identity. This thing emerged about during the 21st century to describe a person who was born with unique variations of how our brains and central nervous system works. An empath has the ability to read and understand people and be in tune with or resonate with others. You know, that can be either voluntarily or involuntary. As,
right.
Depending upon how deep you are as an empath. In mm-hmm. general, the biggest trait of an empath is a huge degree of overall sensitivity. Now, we don't necessarily have that sensitivity, you know, the way a psychic may have. Some of us are psychics, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But all of the sensory organs of an empath have an unusual sensitivity to light, smell, and sound, as well as other subtler senses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Again, the degree to which they are sensitive depends on the capacity of their natural abilities. Now,
mm-hmm.
empath also possesses a very sensitive emotional nature that is typically difficult to self-manage. However,
mm-hmm.
being highly sensitive is only one part of being an empath. Some empaths are very, very intuitive, okay? They have a deep sense of knowing. So with that, why don't we go to some of the details of what an empath is? Because some of you out there don't realize that the nature of the vibrations of the face of this earth is affecting you
mm-hmm.
in wild and crazy ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not even know that you're an empath being shaken, being disrupted,
mm-hmm.
being, you know, like your whole inner system is like an earthquake going on inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
When they bombed Syria, we
mm-hmm.
all felt that shock wave
mm-hmm.
energetically.
Mm-hmm.
When those people are dying all around the face of this earth, we are feeling that. Last week, Fabio said, we are all one. So you
mm-hmm.
think that the people that are being killed over there, we're not feeling it?
Right.
Of course we are. They are
mm-hmm.
us and we are them. Energetically, the energy
mm-hmm.
is in tune to one energy on the face of this earth.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So,
exactly.
Empaths are knowing. They just know stuff without being told.
Mm-hmm.
It's knowing that goes way beyond intuition or gut feelings,
mm-hmm.
even though that is how many would describe the knowing. The more attuned they are, the stronger this gift becomes.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Empaths. Being in public places can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling others' emotions and taking them on as their own. This is a huge one for empaths. To some, they will feel emotions of those nearby, and with others, they will feel emotions from those a vast distance away, like those
mm-hmm.
people over there in Syria. During 9/11, I almost had an anxiety attack that I thought was going to kill me. because mm-hmm. of all the stuff that was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Watching
mm-hmm.
violence, cruelty, or tragedy on the TV is unbearable. The more attuned mm-hmm. an empath becomes, the worse it is and may make it so. I have not turned on my television set since my daughter called me Friday night and told me that our president bombed Syria. That is news I do not want to get any details about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't turn on my TV set. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't watch Maury. I don't watch. He's not the baby's father. Those people, when they bear their souls out there like that, that thing hurts me to my heart watching those people mm-hmm. go through that ignorance on TV. I don't watch that stuff mm-hmm. because I have the utmost compassion in my soul for those people who are being slam dunked. It's like, how can you allow yourself to bear your soul out there like that? Like you in one of those, what do you call it, those arenas in the Roman times? And they got the fingers up or the fingers down. Oh, kill him.
That's what it is.
I know. Okay. Empaths know when someone is not being honest, or we can tell a liar from across the street. Mm-hmm. If a friend or loved one is telling you lies, you know it. Although many empaths try not to focus on this because knowing a loved one is lying can be painful. Or if someone is saying one thing but feeling, thinking another, yeah, that hurts. Mm-hmm. And I don't like, you know, some people say, like my sponsee was saying today, she was so funny. She was saying, and it's the truth, what you think of me is not my business. But you know mm-hmm. what? When I find out what you're thinking about me and what you're thinking about me is not true, that hurts me to my heart. Okay? It may not be my business, but that thing is hurting me because you're going out there, you saying stuff about me that's not even true. And you got other people thinking this stuff.
Listen, what I've discovered is that in situations like that, they are teaching you more about them. And that's what I usually go, oh, my goodness, thank you for the lesson. Thank you for the understanding.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Because, I mean, you can't control it.
No,
and
you can't.
I tell Rachel that all the time. Rachel is so sensitive. I mean, Rachel sees, like, I don't know how to explain it, like, thoughts coming through the air. You know, that's how sensitive she is. They're thinking this. I said, they're teaching you about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Here's a big one for me. This is a big one, and I just suffered it Friday. Mm. Digestive orders and lower back problems. The solar plexus chakra is based mm-hmm. in the center of the abdomen. And it's known as the seat of emotions.
Yeah.
This is where empaths feel the incoming emotion of another, which can weaken the area and eventually lead to anything from stomach ulcers to irritable bowel syndrome. Too many other conditions to list here. Lower back problems can develop from being ungrounded, amongst other things, and one. Who has no knowledge of them being an empath will almost always be ungrounded. I start grounding myself more, you know, because I'm really screwed up, honey.
Look, well, now that you told me that, you know, your daughter called and said that we bombed Syria on Friday. See, you didn't tell me that when we spoke before. You just said you had these issues on Friday. And now that you tell me that, I'm like, well, no wonder she was sick, you know? So I'm like, oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I got you.
Thank you. Somebody needs to got me. Empaths are always looking out for the underdog. Anyone who's suffering in emotional pain or being bullied draws an empath's attention and compassion. Mm-hmm. Others will want to offload their problems on you, empaths, even strangers. And then Bath would become a dumping ground for everyone else's issues and problems, which, if they're not careful, can end up as their own.
Yeah.
Constant fatigue. Empaths often drained of energy, okay, either from energy vampires or just taking on too much from others, which even sleep will not cure.
Right.
So empaths, you know, like, y'all out there, I'm feeling you big time, okay?
I love that. I'm feeling you.
I'm feeling you big time because, come on, addictive personality. We empaths do have addictive personalities. Addictive personalities to alcohol, drugs, sex, to name a few, but a few addictions that emotions turn to block out the emotions of others. It is a form of self-protection in order to hide from someone or something. That was the crux of my drinking. I used to drink to turn off stuff. I knew too much. I was feeling too much. I used to drink thinking I was relaxing.
Shoot. You was relaxing all right.
Yeah. I was making that stuff even worse.
Woo, Lord. Oh,
and empaths are drawn to healing, holistic therapies, and all things metaphysical. Yeah, we are. You know, we can be creative. We love nature. Empaths have a great need for solitude. An empath will go stir crazy if they don't get quiet time. This is even obvious in empathic children. Empaths get bored or distracted easily, if not stimulated. So we need stimulation, but at the same time, you know, we need work, school, and home life that has to be kept interesting for an empath. You know, we find it impossible to do things that we don't enjoy, and we strive for the truth. Empaths are always looking for the answers and knowledge. Okay? That's why you're a good co-host, because you're very knowledgeable. I enjoy listening to you. I enjoy having our conversations when we're not on air, because and I'll probably talk to you when we get off here. I'll give you enough time to spend dinner with your family, but we're getting on the phone, girl.
Yes, I know. I really love that we've reconnected. We've been, you know, away from talking to each other so long, and then we just connected again. That was really wonderful. I'm like, yes, let's talk. Rachel's like, you be sitting around the house like, okay, honey, all right. And you get on the phone with Ola Yankee, you be like, yeah. She's like, you all animated and everything. I'm like, what's going on over there? They just having so much fun. I'm like,
Yeah, we do. We have a good time. Okay, you empaths out there, you have horror. You don't like clutter. Okay, it makes an empath feel weighted down, and it blocks the flow of energy, and that's the truth. I got to do something with my office area. I'm glad my sister's coming to stay for a couple of weeks, because it gives me an opportunity to clear out my space and to make it neat, because somebody's coming in here. So I'm shredding paper and stuff, you know, and trying to get things kind of sorted out and putting the jewelry in the jewelry box and moving this over here, and, you know, and it still look a mess.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, I hear that.
Oh, boy. We find routine rules or control imprisoning. Anything that takes away our freedom is debilitating. We're prone to carry weight without necessarily overeating.
Yep.
I plan on losing 30 pounds while I'm on disability. You know, I ain't going to go back fatter than I am when I go back to work, because I done laid around because of my shoulder. My shoulder ain't got nothing to do with my feet moving. Okay? Although my physical therapist is coming to the house for 2 weeks. Yeah, he coming over here and put up the table in my living room for him to work on my shoulder.
That's wonderful.
I know. I'm feeling special. That's what happens when you humble yourself and tell people you need them. You know?
You don't want to block your own blessings sometimes.
I know.
You know?
And yeah. I do have someone coming here tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning to meet with me so that we can talk about transportation. You know what? Right here in the middle of this show, we're going to get cut off. We got 32 seconds, Lavio. You better say your goodbyes. We done talked our butts off
goodbye,
tonight.
Goodbye, goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
We got 24 seconds, 23 seconds, and the show is going to go off. Like, yeah.
Bam. Cut you right off. Take care.
So
everyone,
I'll talk to you soon. Okay?
Yes,
we'll see everybody on the first Sunday of May.
Yes.
Everybody take care. Thanks for listening to us, and hope we didn't bore you because we had a lot to talk about. Take care. Night.
Good night.